Welcome to part two of our interview with Wesley Fox about a haunting in Arkansas, a haunting of his home. And thank you for being a gravekeeper, supporting our program, and keeping us on the air.
Which, right after Jim moved, Carol's husband, Ross, he promised Dad that he was going to be over like that, I think it was that Tuesday, so like in like 3 days from this point, that he'd come over that Tuesday and help Dad fix the roof before he went to work. Because over by where the master bedroom window was, that part of the roof was like, I don't know, it was starting to rot is what it was, because it was, you know, so old. So Dad was going to, you know, fix that, but he needed help. And so Ross promised him, I will be there, you know, no matter what. That day comes, and 12 o'clock hits when Ross is supposed to be there, and he's not there. And 12:15, 12:20, Dad's starting to get really, really angry. Dad's had a very short fuse, quick temper. Finally, after about 12:30, Dad grabs his glass of tea and just kind of slams it in the sink. Of course, glass goes everywhere. He goes, well, you know, forget this. You can't rely on other people, and I'm not going to go with the language Dad said, but he had a big old nice tirade of calling him all kinds of names. And Dad, you know, said he's going to go. He had to have this, I don't know what, like a huge piece of wood that he had to carry up the ladder. And, you know, he needed help to do it. But now he was so mad, he's just going to do it himself. And he tried, you know, Mary tried to help him. Like, Dad, you know, let me help you. And Dad just looked at her and said, no, Mary, there's nothing you can do to help me. And, you know, of course, Mary's crying and scared because, you know, she don't want Dad to get hurt. And then at the same time, her feelings are hurt because, you know, Dad wouldn't let her help. But he's carrying this huge piece of wood up the ladder all by himself. And then as Mary is watching her, during part of it, he said it looked like almost like Dad almost like was pushed. And, you know, it was confirmed later that Dad felt like something, you know, pushed him with that piece of normal. It almost made him fall off backwards on the ladder. But he's able to catch himself. And he was able to do the roof. Now, the incident really didn't end there, because I think 2 days go by and, you know, we haven't seen Ross. We haven't seen Carol. And, of course, you know, Mary hasn't seen Lisa. So Mom and Dad's starting to worry. He's like, okay, what's wrong with them? So after work, after Dad got off work, you know, we decided to drive to their house, which is in Rogers, just like 5 miles away, to check on them. We got there, and I know Ross told Dad, he goes, Jesse, I'm so sorry I didn't show up. But he goes, I went out to go help you, and I had 4 flat tires on my car. And he starts, you know, walking Dad around the car, showing him the tires, and each tire had the same cut mark, like in the same spot in the tire, in all 4 tires. Now, how is that possible?
Yeah.
And Dad, it was almost like something was trying to keep Ross from helping Dad that day. So that's the only thing remotely that ever happened to Ross, because Ross didn't believe in any of that. Mm-hmm. He was one of the people at the cannery making fun of my mom and Dad. So I think I got to the point where my sister Barb moved in. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, so Barb's moved in. Things really ramp up when Barb moves in. So bad that, you know, Mom and Dad know something's happened. Because now Mom, she's starting to hear voices. She woke up a few days after Barb moved in, and she heard voices. And the voices said, we'll get the one looking down the hall, and the other one too. And Mom knew she was the one looking down the hall. Because, you know, at night, the way the bed was, she could look out the door, and you could see down the hall. And Mom was always said there was like, she always felt like there was someone watching us. And so she was always looking down the hall. So when she heard those voices, you know, that kind of confirmed to her something was wrong.
Yeah.
And then, like, within a day or two of that, probably the next day or something, or the day after probably, Mom woke up a little bit a little bit early for work, and she was scared. She didn't know why, but, you know, she hurried up and got downstairs, got her lunch together, and within, like, you know, she's laying down there for, like, 10 minutes, she hurried up and went to the, sat outside on the porch waiting for her ride, because she felt too scared to actually be in the house. And I want to say either right before that or right after that, she'd woke up, you know, getting her lunch together, everyone's gone, and all of a sudden she hears this like big slam, like something just slammed down. And she looked around, couldn't find nothing. And there was nothing that had fallen or nothing. So that kind of spooked Mom. And when her ride got there that day, she went, you know, her ride, after she got in the car, they smelled like a man's aftershave or something. Mm-hmm. And then it was like almost with them the whole car ride, and it kind of disappeared as they got out and walked into their to the plant that they were working at. So that day they felt like they kind of had a hitchhiker, if you know what I mean.
Sure.
And then so things were ramping up like that. And then with Dad, once again, one morning he woke up shaven, and this was right around that same time. He was shaven, and he seen this blue light once again, that blue ball. And this time when he came downstairs, he knew that something was there. You know, he knew he was not, had not been drinking at all. So, I mean, he knew this was not his mind playing tricks with everything else. This kind of finally convinced him that maybe we need to do something. So Dad suggested for Mom, since she had the day off that day, for her to have Barb and her boyfriend Ralph take her over to the, you know, local church. So that day, you know, they go to the church, and my mom, you know, she talked to one of it was a Baptist preacher, and she tells him that, you know, hey, we live in this house over here, we're having some issues, can you help? And the guy laughs at her. He goes, you know, ghosts don't exist. Ghosts are like cartoon characters. It's only in your imagination. My mom was pissed.
Imagine.
She let him have it.
Yeah.
She told him off in several different ways. He did say, well, he goes, the only thing I can tell you to do is get your Bible and read out. And he said, and it'll be in red where Jesus is talking. So read that out loud. So I want to say later that night, we did the prayer that preacher said. And then I think we did it again a couple hours later because it helped. And then things started right back up, getting, you know, twice as bad. So Mom had Ralph read out of the Bible again. And this time, as he started to read, you seen the Bible just like get flung out of his arm. And he starts grabbing his hand in pain. And he says, it feels like something just stabbed me. And come to find out, right before the Bible went flying out of his hand, something told him, shut the Bible. And then that's when something stabbed him, and the Bible went flying. So, you know, now things were bad.
Obviously. I mean, what occurs at this point when things are getting so bad, there's physical violence happening with forces that can't be seen.
Now, go forward about 2 days, and it's on a Sunday, that mom, your mom's telling my dad, you know, listen, we got to call your sister. My aunt at the time she wasn't a paranormal investigator, but she was, you know, intuitive for sure. I mean, she knew things and could see some things. But, you know, she had a lot of knowledge as well on the paranormal and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Dad's like, no, I'm not calling her. Carol's, you know, Carol, it's going to be fine. But finally, Carol, my mom, she's like, listen, you know, there's things that I have not told you that's happened. And Mom started telling him some different stuff that happened to Lisa. Which one of the things that I'd forgot about is a couple days before this, Lisa was strolling her baby stroller, you know, in that little circle that I was telling you about from the living room to the French doors, you know, kitchen. Mm-hmm. And her and Mom were just kind of like playing like almost like a peekaboo game. And then finally, you know, Lisa stopped coming around. So Mom was like, okay, what's going on? And then all of a sudden she heard Lisa scream like bloody murder. So she hurries up and goes looking for it and found the stroller in the kitchen. And then Lisa, she found Lisa trying to get in the oven, like something was scaring her so bad that she was trying to get away from it. So Dad didn't know about that. So Mom told him about that. And then finally, you know, my dad, he's believing it and he's angry. He stands up and his exact words, he said, it's bad enough that you have to pick on my wife and my kids. He said, but God damn, you leave my grandchildren alone. And about that time that, you know, we had the dish rack and the dishes in the dish rack kind of shook. My mom grabbed my dad real quick, said, come on, Jesse, let's go over here to the plant and call your sister. Let's go now. So, you know, they went over and called my aunt. And my aunt, she lived in Longton, Kansas at the time, which is about 150 miles away or so. And when my dad called her, he said, you know, the only thing he said is I need you to come down here. And, of course, you know, my aunt wouldn't do it until my dad actually told her what was going on. He goes, I don't know if we're crazy or what's going on, but I just need you to help me out. So my aunt, you know, talked to her husband, see what his work schedule was, and they figured out that they could come down you know, that night after he got off work, but it'd just be about like a 24-hour trip, you know, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So my aunt comes down that night. She gets there about 2:30, 3 a.m. You know, Carol's there waiting on her. My mom and dad are asleep. I'm asleep. But my uncle and my brother, Jess, my oldest brother, you know, nothing ever happened to him. He was barely there. But he happened to be over there that night. And he goes outside and helps my uncle with my aunt. And then she brought her son and her son's wife at the time with them as well. And they were all outside getting stuff. Well, my aunt was in the kitchen by herself because my sister Carol went up to wake all of us up. So my aunt's standing there in the kitchen by herself, and all of a sudden she felt something lift up her ponytail. Just kind of lift it up and then set it back down. Mm-hmm. You know, not knowing any of the stories, she thought maybe it was like a moth or maybe something like that.
Sure.
But she figured it out once she heard about the man with the cane, that he kind of lifted her ponytail up with his cane and set it down almost like a taunting her a little bit. But almost immediately when mom and dad come down, you know, my aunt has to go to the bathroom. So she asked my mom to show her where the bathroom was. And my sister Mary and mom accompany her to the upstairs bathroom. And they said, you know, we'll go up here with you. We'll stand outside by the door. We do everything in twos now because, you know, it's just not safe to do things by yourself. So as my aunt is in the bathroom doing her business from the heat vent, she starts hearing a chanting sound. And she couldn't understand what it was doing, what it was saying. But, you know, it frightened her enough where she tried to hurry up and do her business. And then going down the stairs, when they were going back down, going into the dining room to sit and talk, my aunt, she was just scared to death something was going to try to push her down the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
Said she didn't know why, but she just had that feeling. Well, they got downstairs safely, and they're downstairs talking, telling my aunt about some of the stuff. And my dad, you know, tells his sister, my aunt Mary, that, you know, hey, I'm gonna go upstairs, I'm gonna get Wesley, because, you know, I don't want to leave him up there by himself. So they bring me downstairs with them. I'm still sleeping. You know, I think I woke up long enough to talk a little bit, but I ended up falling back asleep because I had to go to school the next day. But my dad, after, you know, he got me situated, he says, starts telling some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, right after we first moved in, when we had our barbecue, a guy said something to me. And my mom says, yeah, Jesse, you said it was just crazy locals. And my dad shook his head and goes, no. He goes, I'm sorry. He said, but that guy said, if you love your wife and kids, you will move out of that house now. That house needs burned to the ground, is what that man told my dad that night, that day at the barbecue. And my dad felt so bad because, you know, he didn't tell anybody. He didn't say anything until that day.
Sure.
But dad's told everything. You know, we're telling my aunt at this point, everything that's going on with everybody. You know, before too long, dad has to go back upstairs and try to get a couple hours sleep before he has to be at work. And he asked my sister Mary to sit up there with him while he sleeps for her to read. Because, you know, once again, no one wanted to do anything alone. Everyone was scared. Everyone was scared at this point except for Mary. Mary was the one that wasn't scared. Which was weird because Mary was really scared, and then all of a sudden she's not scared. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what is the reason for that?
We really don't know, except for my aunt. In the end, said she thinks something in that house was trying to possess her.
Okay.
It's like trying to, you know, break down her free will, and it was getting her to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they think if we would have stayed another night in that house, that she probably would have.
So is that the point where you decide to leave, or the family decides to leave? How does the exodus occur?
This is kind of where the exodus is starting, because, you know, he wanted my aunt's opinion. After my dad goes to bed, my aunt would go get her a cup of coffee every now and then. You know,
mm-hmm.
there was a door that was shut off that hallway. Well, my aunt, you know, she had the door shut, and then she went to get another cup of coffee, and the door was open. So she's like, oh, okay, we'll see here. So she went in there, you know, on purposely, you know, just kind of get up, make sure the door's shut, sit down, and about time, 20 minutes later, you know, get some more coffee, she got up and the door was open again. And she said, now, damn you, keep this door shut. And the door never opened up again the rest of the night. But it was during that same time as they were in there talking, they would see a dark hooded figure That dark hooded figure was seen a couple different times. Mm-hmm. And then I think after Dad went to work the next day, Mom stayed home that day from work. I think it was one of her days off at the time. So I think they were doing 4 days a week. But so my aunt was with my mom a lot that day. She got to see a lot of the different stuff that was going on. So, and I know, my aunt went upstairs with my sister Mary. And this was probably a couple hours before my aunt was getting ready to leave. Mary had to get some laundry together, you know, and Kate, at that point, it was just in case we were going to leave that night. So my aunt went up there with her, and they're looking. My aunt's just kind of looking around. She sees different candles my sister had, which are, you know, white candles, nothing bad. But my aunt was kind of scolding her a little bit, saying, hey, you got to watch out, you know, burning candles in this house because, you know, it'll catch fire real quick. So they went ahead. My aunt, from where she was at, she seen something underneath my sister's bed. She's like, hey, what is this? There's almost like a big throw rug that was under the bed. So they kind of lift up that throw rug, and there's a pentagram that was carved into the wood. And my aunt's like, oh my God, that's not good. And about that time, they hurry up. It's like, okay, well, we got to get out of here. You know, come on, Mary, let's go. And about that time, my aunt, she can't talk. She can't, you know, she can't breathe. She can't do nothing. And she's being like something's pushing her backwards out of the room. And it took her a minute to get my sister Mary's attention. When she got Mary's attention, you know, she was almost upstairs, and my sister was kind of able to grab her so she didn't fall down the stairs. But they were able to get out of that room. And that's when my aunt knew 100%, told Harley, we've got to get out now. You know, that we cannot stay another night in that house. That kind of did it in right there. But it was probably a couple. But they decided, I want to say it was an hour before we left, or before my aunt left, they, you know, my uncle was trying to let him take a nap so he'd get ready for work. Mm-hmm. And I think I was possibly still at school, but Mom, Aunt Mary, and Mary, all three walked up to the store because we lived, maybe two blocks from like a little convenience store. And they walked down there. When they get back, my aunt noticed my uncle looked like he was dreaming.
Okay.
And they decided that, you know, like, you know, well, what, why is his eyes moving like that? Like he's, you know, dreaming something really weird. But, you know, my aunt just let him sleep. And they went and talked. They were talking about the different stuff in the house. And then all of a sudden, you know, my uncle woke up and they didn't know he woke up. And he said, hey, you're talking about the woman that hung herself in the stairwell, right? And everyone looked at him like, what the heck did that come from? He goes, yeah. He goes, I heard you guys talking about it. You're talking about the woman that hung herself in the stairwell or the guy that was shot over here. And once again, they're like, what are you talking about? So that was some dream you had, you know? And he goes, no. He goes, I heard you guys talking. And they said, you also was telling me that that there was another spirit that was invited in. But he's the main one, mm-hmm. is what my uncle said a woman was telling him. But he thought it was like Mary or Mom, you know, somebody like that. Come to find out, these things were basically having a conversation with him when he was sleeping. And my uncle, you know, Uncle John did not believe any of the stuff, even to the day he passed away this last summer. He did not believe. But it was probably shortly after that when another incident with Lisa happened. During the same day, this day was probably the worst day on earth for my family. They bring little Lisa over, and something happens to her there in the kitchen to where the eyes on the tapestry my mother had. It had the tendency in that house to follow you. Like, if you moved to the left, the eyes would move left, you know? Mm-hmm. But something was scaring Lisa because my Aunt Mary noticed Lisa's eyes would look up at the tapestry, and then she looked down. But all of a sudden, Lisa started crying and screaming and trying to get out, you know, get out the front door as quick as she could. So everyone ended up taking her outside, and she was just crying and screaming even outside. So finally, Carol said, you know, Aunt Mary, I'm sorry. She goes, but, you know, I can't get Lisa to settle down. I got to take her home. So they took her home, and right as my aunt was getting ready to leave, like within 20 minutes, Carol's husband, Ross, came over really pissed off and angry. you guys are just trying to scare my daughter, blah, blah, blah. This house ain't haunted. You guys are all crazy and full of it. You know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So finally my mom said, Ross, if that's what you think, you get your sorry, you know, but you go up in that attic. You tell me if anything happens to you, mm-hmm. or are you too scared to go up there? So Ross had my cousin go up there with him in the attic. I have no idea really what happened. My cousin Johnny didn't see anything, and Ross would never talk about it. He never spoke about it. He come down, sit at the kitchen table, and he was white as a ghost. And my mom noticed it. And my mom, you know, she's a lot like me. She taunted the hell out of him. What's wrong, Ross? This house ain't haunted. Are you sure, Ross? Ross finally just left. But it was probably like within an hour of that, my dad got off work or had a break, and my aunt was leaving, and he got to come and say goodbye. And she said, Jesse, he goes, you guys are not crazy, but you do not need to stay another night in this house. If you do, you know, something bad's going to happen. And I think it's after Mary. So that night we left the house and never returned. It didn't follow us, but you know, I don't know how much more time we have, but it follows us in other ways. How much time do we have?
We're about ready to wrap it up because we're pretty much at the time right now. But we can certainly, you know, discuss some of the ways that it followed you in another interview at some point.
Yeah, that would have to be a part two, because I can go sure. into the aftermath and then what I think would totally beat the house once and for all.
Sure.
And that was an exorcism I performed in 2017.
At the actual house?
It wasn't at the actual house.
Okay.
It was because the house, after we moved out in there, there was, I think, three more families move in. Mm-hmm. One family, I got about 5 minutes, right?
Sure.
So there was one family that moved in. They were a young couple that, you know, they, at the time were kind of giving dad a lot of crap about, you know, the house not being haunted, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there for about a week. And then one day after Halloween, maybe 2 weeks. So it was after Halloween, dad came in from work and he seen that the lady was sitting outside. So dad went over to talk to her a minute. So, hey, how are you guys doing? She said, we're fine. He goes, hey, how'd your Halloween party go? And she said, we had uninvited guests. And then she just continued to cry, and that was it. And we never found out what happened. Right after they moved out, another family moved in. They were there for maybe 3 weeks, and one of the relatives, one of the older relatives, was pushed down the stairs by something. So they didn't stay. Now, there was at least one other family that I got in touch with kind of by accident that I didn't even know, but they lived in the house for quite a while, and they really didn't have any issues. But they didn't do any of the fixing up and restoring that we were doing.
Okay.
And that might have been why. I'm not sure exactly if they were there right before us or right after.
When you left the house, I'm assuming, did you go back and get your belongings, or was it like Amityville, get out?
It was, since Mary was the only one that was not scared, you know, she was more than willing to go get all you know, pack everything up. Mm-hmm. And dad agreed to it. As long as, and you know, dad worked right next door, so dad knew.
Yeah.
You know, when it would start, right before it got dark, dad would go over and make sure that she was in the car and they were going home.
Okay.
So that, you know, Mary did do that. And then, of course, we had borrowed a truck and went in there and got stuff during the daytime, you know, to finish it all off.
Yeah.
But, you know, even through when the house was still there, even when it was empty, my aunt would come down for a visit, and, you know, they'd kind of drive around the property of the house just for the heck of it, just to see. And there's at least one time that there was they seen a lady in white kind of following them. They'd see her in each like window of the attic and upstairs windows, like following them as they were driving away. And there was even one time they tried to drive away and something was like holding the car back, but they couldn't move. And then finally the car went and they never went back after that.
Retrospectively looking at this whole thing, what do you think it was that was in that house?
That house definitely had demons. There was a spirit of a lady there, and she was the one that hung herself in the stairwell. There was the spirit of the man that, the old man with the cane, which that man, after doing research, we found out there was a man, you know, an older, as a young man, though, he was kicked in the kneecap by a mule, so he had to walk with a cane all his life. That same man in the upstairs master bedroom, he was shot in the face with a double barrel shotgun.
Oh.
And of course, that's how he died. In the early 1920s in that house, there was a satanic cult that performed rituals in the attic. We found that out, which that's how the demonic spirit was invited, and that's why it was there. And then, you know, the little girl, my aunt would have dreams about that little girl that I seen.
Mm-hmm.
She'd have a dream where she's walking all the way through the house, and then all of a sudden she said, as she gets down at the bottom stair, said she would see this little girl standing on the landing height of the stairs, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that the face, it would go from a girl to a boy, and then to something else, boy, girl, something else. It was just kind of constantly changing. And it would say, "I fooled you. I fooled you all." Which makes sense now, because my research, I found out there was a girl named Dora Dean that, as a young girl, had polio and had braces and lived in that house. But she didn't die until just a few years ago. So that was the demon playing on the past. You know what I mean?
That wraps up part two of our interview with Wesley Fox about a haunting in Arkansas and the terrorizing experience he and his family went through. Thank you for supporting the program, keeping us on the air, and being a gravekeeper. We could not do it without you. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you.